Catskill. From Radio Catskill Studios in Liberty, New York, this is the local edition. I'm Jason Dole here with you live tonight. Thank you so much for being here with me. Well, coming up, Mary Louise Kelly, co-host of NPR's All Things Considered, has a new weekly podcast called Sources and Methods, the dive into the biggest national security stories of the week. Patricio Rubio speaks with Mary Louise Kelly coming up in the second half of this program. Plus, Sullivan County seems to be taking a gamble on the Resorts World Casino in Monticello to the tune of a little more than $525 million. Radio Catskill's Genevieve Hartnett has a special report with the latest detail. She joins me in just a few minutes. We're going to start first tonight with news from Orange County, New York, where a cannabis company is planning to launch a processing facility in Middletown, New York, but it won't be able to sell its wares there because of the city's own rules against dispensaries. New York Public News Network's Jesse King reports.
Mr. Madden.
Yes.
Mr. McCormick.
Yes.
Mr. Brito.
Yes.
Ms. Witt.
Yes.
The Middletown Planning Board recently voted to declare its intent to serve as the lead agency in the planning of a new cannabis processing facility at 55 Midland Avenue Extension. Jeter, a subsidiary of Dreamfields, Inc., makes pre-rolled cannabis joints that it sells in Canada, California, Michigan, Arizona, Massachusetts, and now New York. The company just started selling its products in dispensaries across the state over the weekend. Middletown, however, is not among the places where Jeter's joints will be sold. Democratic Middletown Mayor Joseph DeStefano says the city is only interested in the business of rolling joints, not selling them.
It'll be a good addition for the economic drive of the region because not only is it the job-producing for the Middletown area and tax-producing for the Middletown area, but it's also good for farmers and others who provide product to the facility. So that's not my cup of tea, but apparently a lot of people are drinking that cup of tea and we're happy to host the facility.
Middletown opted not to allow dispensaries within city limits when New York began planning its legal cannabis market in 2021. It was far from the only municipality to do so, and many other communities in Orange County also banned dispensaries, but Middletown is the only city in the county to opt out. DeStefano says the city wasn't sure if it had the capacity to keep up with cannabis regulations at the time, and it was skeptical of how the legal market would pan out.
It was unexpected. We don't know what to expect. We didn't think New York would regulate it correctly in the beginning. We wanted to have a wait-see. We don't know what kind of producer it is. So we always take a position on these types of things, step backwards, let other people take the lead on the retail and on the consumption, and we'll just monitor and see how things go.
DeStefano says the city could pass a law to opt in to the retail market in the future, but he's not currently in favor of the idea, and he doesn't see it happening anytime soon. But he views the Jeter facility differently, describing it as a, quote, pharmaceutical processing operation. Cannabis will not be grown or dried on the site, only packaged. DeStefano says the building is a good fit because it's in a non-residential area, has been in and out of use for years, requires few updates for Jeter, and has enough internal controls to limit emissions and smells.
Some people have expressed concern about potential odors in the neighborhood. First of all, it's not a residential neighborhood, it's a completely industrial area. As a matter of fact, next door is the metals recycling facility. But it's a closed setting. It's heavily regulated.
DeStefano says Jeter has already started hiring for the factory, and it's expected to bring roughly 200 jobs to the region. SUNY Orange, which leads six community colleges in the Hudson Valley Cannabis Consortium, is reportedly looking at ways to create a talent pool and develop workforce training for the region's cannabis industry. Dr. Jean Leandre is the Vice President of Workforce Strategy and Innovation at SUNY Orange.
Being able to have an organization land right here in Middletown that does a variety of different things is going to be huge, right? So the Hudson Valley, a lot of the things that we've been seeing employers coming in has mostly been retail. Not saying we don't have other pieces, but a lot of it has been retail.
Meantime, DeStefano says he expects the planning board's process to be short, taking only about a month.
In Poughkeepsie, I'm Jesse King for the New York Public News Network.
Thank you, Jesse King, for that report. Well, now we have tonight's feature story on the local edition. It's a bit complicated and more than a bit important, so thankfully I'll be joined in just a moment by the reporter who's been investigating what's happening with Resorts World Catskills in Monticello, New York, because since its inception in 2018, the casino has been losing money, and it's facing even more competition on the horizon as more casinos potentially open downstate. So a new LDC was formed as a nonprofit on behalf of Sullivan County to continue development of the property. The Sullivan County Resorts Facilities Local Development Corporation is issuing a bond to purchase the majority of entertainment assets of Resorts World Catskills. The more than $500 million transaction is said to be one that will continue to boost the casino's positive impact on jobs in the county. But some residents are already wondering, with an ongoing housing crisis and significant job losses elsewhere in the county, are the sprawling casino, golf course, and hotel what should be getting a shot in the arm right now? Earlier today, I spoke with Radio Catskills Genevieve Hartnett, who's been reporting on this story for us. Genevieve, welcome back to the local edition.
Thank you so much for having me, Jason.
This is a big story with a lot of details and a lot of moving parts. So can we get some background on why any of this is even happening, like how the casino in Monticello has been doing?
Sure. So the casino, the Resorts World Catskills Casino, was built in 2018 in Monticello. It is one of four that was actually approved in a 2013 amendment to New York state law to allow gaming in upstate New York, to allow casino gaming in upstate New York. And it was brought to the Catskills basically on the promise that it would create more union jobs, that it would bring more economic development into the county. Unfortunately, it has been seen to do very much not that. SEC filings have shown it losing money pretty handily in the 6 to 7 years that it's been open. And while it did create about 1,400 union jobs, in 2019, it actually, its owner, Empire Resorts, actually petitioned for it to no longer become a publicly holding company, as it, quote, no longer believes that the company can become financially self-sustaining as a standalone public company. And it should be noted that around that time, the Malaysian gaming giant Genting Malaysia, this is when they invested about 49% in the stock to try to revive it.
Yeah, and could you just explain me a little bit of the significance there of what that means, that they were saying, you know, you can't necessarily stand as a public company, but it could be a private company. What's the significance of that?
So basically, you know, it was brought in to be this economic engine for the county, but a lot of people question if whether a international corporately held project is going to be transferring funds most successfully to the county, which is part of the argument of the IDA right now of why they want to make it a more county held property, more privately held.
Right. Okay. So let's talk about those steps. What is the plan? What are they putting together?
Sure. So in 2025, the County of Sullivan Infrastructure Development Agency, or the IDA, they created the Resorts Facility Local Development Corporation. And this was its role in the Resorts World transactions were to finance and hold ownership of non-gaming entertainment-related assets of the casino, while Resorts World will continue to manage those businesses, the gaming aspect, and operate the casino. So the major parts of, but in August, they agreed to put in, basically issue over $500 million to buy out the entertainment assets of the casino. So this includes the hotel, this includes the Monster Golf Course, as well as the Alder Hotel and Entertainment Village.
So basically, this local development corporation is acquiring a lot of the assets, but not the gaming assets, meaning not the casino aspect of the casino, the actual gambling machines and tables and things like that. Is that right?
Correct, yes.
Okay, so what does that do for the county?
So the county is arguing that this will be a great way to bring in even more union jobs. And even though Sullivan County faces a housing crisis right now, I spoke with legislator Matt McPhillips, who is also the head of the economic committee for Sullivan County. And he also hoped that this could be a way that potentially affordable housing could be built around the casino, although the IDA and the Resorts Facility Local Development Corporation have not indicated any such plans as of yet.
This kind of sounds like Sullivan County is bailing out the casino here in Sullivan County. Is that what's going on?
Well, it's certainly with the numbers, and many people in the community are receiving it that way. If you look on the Sullivan County Post Facebook groups, many people are questioning why this is the priority when this year we have the Frito-Lay manufacturing arm leave the county, as that left a lot of people out of work, as well as the Gateway Housing Project, which we've continued to report on at the station. However, legislator McPhillips maintains that this is not going to be paid for by taxpayers. The IDA has stated in their August 2025 activity report that it will be payments to the Resorts Facility Corporation will be funded by a general tax on the territory.
Okay, and actually we have a clip from when you interviewed Matt McPhillips for this article, so let's play that now.
I really wanted to assure the people and the taxpayers in Sullivan County that they have no stake in this deal. There's no collateral that the county or its taxpayers are responsible for with respect to this deal. This is more to allow the casino to reconsolidate, reposition itself, and really invest in this property, which has been the largest economic development project in the county's history, and we're hoping to build on that. We saw the casino come in here. A lot of jobs were created, and we want to protect those jobs. We want to make sure that the tax revenue that's generated by these businesses and the casino itself are being put to good use for the people of Sullivan County and contributing to the things that we really need here and the things that we really need to work on.
So the taxpayers of Sullivan County have no stake in this. I just want to clarify again, like, so where's that $500 million coming from?
Yeah, so it's something that the community has a lot of questions on. The IDA has said that the bond will be issued by the local development corporation and that it will be paid for through a tax on the land being developed. I've tried to ask for clarification from Jennifer Flad, but that's the most clarification I have gotten at this moment.
Okay, great. So this is a complicated story. How long have you been working on this?
I found out about this as soon as most people in the county did, right before Labor Day weekend. The deal was announced to the community at the end of August, and it should be, the original plan was to have it done by September. However, both parties in the transaction have delayed it for finding increased legal counsel. So we will just have to wait and see, but it will likely be within the next month or 2 months that we'll be hearing a larger development on this.
So that's a time frame and the next visible steps. I'm also wondering, just because you're already seeing, at least in the public sphere on social media, response from the public, I'm wondering, will we be hearing more from the public at any hearings or legislative meetings about this? That's the next thing I'll be watching for.
Definitely. And I know that there will be a Health and Human Services Committee meeting tomorrow to address the housing project. And I will certainly be watching as well to see if something about this comes up, especially given legislator McPhillips' desire to potentially see affordable housing around the casino. The other thing I think it's important to point out is this trade-off, I would say, from the larger Malaysian gaming company is happening at the same time as they are angling for New York City licenses to expand the Resorts World New York City casino that is located in Queens, pretty close to John F. Kennedy Airport. Most of the people that have been attending the Resorts World Catskills Casino are people that are bused in from the city. And so many people are worried that if one more downstate casino is expanded, what will that mean for upstate casinos and the jobs that they have created? So that's another reason why the county sees vested interest in investing in the casino here.
It sounds like there's a race against time that even if all goes well, we don't really know how this will work out because, again, this is what we're trying to do for a casino that has been struggling pretty much from the beginning. So this is all really interesting.
Definitely. And it's definitely something I'm going to be continuing to follow as more developments come out.
Well, Genevieve Hartnett, thank you so much for doing this reporting for Radio Catskill. And this article is up at WJFFradio.org. Genevieve, thank you again.
Thanks so much, Jason.
We've got more news on the way. NPR's Mary Louise Kelly is going to join Patricio Rubio. Stay with us.
You're listening to The Local Edition, winner of Excellence in Broadcasting Awards from the New York State Broadcasters Association. Radio Catskill. Listen local.
Hey there, I'm Jason Dole, letting you know that late summer is golden in the Catskills, and there's still plenty of fun to be had. So come to our Lou Beach Community House Summer Jubilee benefiting Radio Catskill Saturday evening. We've got tunes by Calisun, Lolly and the Pops, DJ Jason Tuga, beer from Catskill Brewery. Join us at the Lou Beach Community House Summer Jubilee up in Lou Beach, just outside Livingston Manor, 5 to 8 Saturday. I'll see you there.
Hey, this is Matt Hurtado. Join me for Virtual Soundscapes, your gateway to the best music in gaming. Classic tracks from the 8-bit era, modern releases, and interviews with the minds behind the games. Thursday night at 10 on Radio Catskill.
The backlash on the right is not because MAGA folks are upset about Trump's relationship with Epstein so much as it is that the Trump administration has backpedaled furiously and Trump has gone from being supportive of that to being the single leading obstacle to full transparency.
I'm Rachel Abrams. That's today on The Daily from The New York Times.
It's coming up in just about 13 minutes right here on Radio Catskill after the local edition. This is the local edition live from Radio Catskill's studios right here in Liberty, New York. I'm Jason Dole, and Radio Catskill's Patricio Rubio recently spoke with NPR's All Things Considered co-host Mary Louise Kelly about her new podcast and what it's all about. You've heard her reporting from War Zones and Halls of Power. Well, her new podcast is called Sources and Methods. And it's going to be bringing people weekly updates on what's happening in national security. Here's Patricio Rubio.
You've heard her reporting from War Zones and the Halls of Power. Now she's bringing that experience to a brand new weekly podcast called Sources and Methods with Mary Louise Kelly. Each Thursday, Mary Louise and a team of NPR correspondents will dive into the week's biggest national security stories, drawing on decades of reports from inside the Pentagon, State Department, and intelligence community. So welcome to the program, Mary Louise.
Patricio, it is my pleasure to join you. Thanks for having me.
So first, I just want to start off with what inspired you to launch Sources and Methods now in this particular political climate that we are going through?
Yeah, so combination of a couple of things. One, we do see the world order shifting in real time, the world order being reordered. And I, along with everybody else, am trying to figure out what is happening. Why is it happening? How much does it matter? What does it mean to me? So those were questions on my mind as I try to make sense of the onslaught of headlines the same way that everybody else is. The other piece of it is, I am so lucky to work with an amazing team of people who can answer a lot of these questions. We have a big national security team based in Washington, headquartered in Washington, but you know, we've got people at perches across the country who are working the Pentagon, working sources on Capitol Hill, working sources at the State Department, working stories at the National Security Agency, the CIA, other spy agencies. And then we have this whole galaxy of bureaus around the world. I mean, historically, a lot of big U.S. news organizations could have said that, but foreign news has been cut back and cut back and cut back, and NPR has fought hard to keep bureaus in cities around the world so that when news breaks, not only are we there, but we've been there. We have the context. We have the reporting. So it gives us such a great lens to say, okay, here's this big headline. The Trump administration just announced they're going to do this thing. Let's go to the place. Let's hear from a correspondent about what it looks like from a different part of the world. And I also think it's worth reminding Americans, with the news cycle being A, relentless, and B, so relentlessly dominated by headlines out of Washington, by the latest move by the Trump White House, reminding people there's a whole big old world out there that is still spinning, and countries are getting on with their own priorities. And sometimes those align with America's, and sometimes they really don't. So letting people hear from reporters, so not analysts, it's not me sitting in a studio just reading you, here's what I saw online today. It's reporters who've been out and they dash back to tell me, here's what I just saw this morning. Here's what I had to go through to get to the hospital not far from the front lines in Ukraine where war is raging. And here's the brain surgeon I just interviewed who's doing, you know, all kinds of pioneering surgery on the injuries coming in there. And here's why that matters. And here's a human story that you may be able to relate to. And here are the questions that I don't know the answers to yet. That just felt like such a fun, interesting and important opportunity to give our reporters a podcast platform to park a lot of the details and tidbits and tips that they're collecting in their reporters' notebooks that maybe don't make it into a daily deadline story on Morning Edition or All Things Considered.
Yeah. And let's talk a little bit about the sort of the role of long form podcasting plays. You know, what role do you think it plays in helping people process, you know, the complicated global issues that are going on now?
Yeah, I think so. You know, when you hear, say, for example, Charles Maines, our Moscow correspondent, filing a story for All Things Considered, you will hear the best, most up-to-date reporting he has. You will have heard it go through multiple editors, multiple fact checks. It sounds quite polished. And, you know, obviously, you know, it's not the whole story. He's going to get up and keep reporting the next day, but it's a packaged, edited, beautiful piece of lovely journalism that we are offering to you. Here's our best whack at this story today. What you don't hear is all the little threads he was pulling on and trying to unravel to get there. All the questions he can't answer yet, or that he didn't have time to answer in that 4-minute piece. So, All Sources and Methods is unscripted. It is me talking to, most weeks it's going to be me with two correspondents, often one who is in Washington and one who's out in the world, or some days it may be one who's covering the White House and one who is covering the Pentagon. And let's compare. Are they hearing the same thing? Do they have sources that are coming at things from a different approach? But you will hear us asking the same questions that I think are on many of our minds about, oh, here's this headline. Help me understand what it means. Help me understand why it matters. And bringing actual reporting, not just analysis, not just our opinions about things. We try to keep those out of it. But the real questions that are on our minds, including ones that we may not know the answers to, but we'll share a little bit of how we are trying to get those answers, who we are going to, what they are telling us, what are the little tidbits and crumbs that we're collecting along the way. And I think there's a humanity to that, to us admitting, hey, we don't know everything either. We're trying to figure it out. And here's a couple of the smartest, best reporters on this beat sharing with you what they know.
Right. Now, you mentioned, you know, like how the news is landscape is changing so much, you know, everything is coming out with this particular administration. You know, how does you and your team sort of decide which national security stories rise to the top each year?
Yeah.
Each week.
Yeah. So some weeks, I think it's going to be obvious. Some weeks there will be a huge development in the Middle East, and that's going to dominate what we have on the podcast that week. And on a week like that, I hope that we will be able to bring you our correspondent on the ground in Tel Aviv and maybe a correspondent on the ground in Doha, for example, or a correspondent who's tracking things from the Pentagon here in Washington and a correspondent who is on the ground in Amman. And they are sharing, here's what I'm learning. Here's what my source is telling me. How does that square with what you're hearing? There are other weeks where we know that there's a bit big event coming up, and we're already kind of homing in on that. So I know that next week, President Trump will be overseas. He's headed to Britain for his second state visit to the UK, and I'll be there reporting with a team, and we're going to be doing the podcast from there. We'll have a White House correspondent who's traveling with the president. Our London correspondent will be at Windsor Castle, where President Trump is going to sit down with King Charles, and we'll see where we end up with that. There are other weeks where it may be a big enterprise story that somebody on our team has dug up something that nobody else knew about because it's enterprise investigative reporting, and we'll share that story in the same way that you might hear it on All Things Considered or Morning Edition, but also give you a real taste of, well, how'd they get tipped off to that? How many people didn't take their call before we got the call returned? What hoops did they have to jump through to try to bring you this story? And share a little bit of, you know, what they're scribbling on their reporter's notebooks pages along the way.
Yes. Now, Mary, Lisa, before we go, just looking ahead, you mentioned some already. But are there any particular guests or topics that you're especially excited or eager to cover and explore in this podcast?
Well, I like the idea of getting to do slightly longer interviews than we will be able to share on a daily deadline news program like All Things Considered, which I host most days. I've been tickled to see how many people are already listening to the podcast, reacting to the podcast, and calling in and saying, hey, can I come be on the podcast? And that would include a former CIA station chief from Moscow, former head of Mossad, the Israeli spy agency. We're hoping to bring you an interview with a U.S. senator who's on the Armed Services Committee this week, talking about changes to the intelligence community and U.S. national security. And so we will air a version of that interview on All Things Considered, but let you hear a longer, more free-flowing interview where you'll hear all the follow-ups and kind of digressions down rabbit holes, and see where we go with that and share longer versions on the podcast. So that is exciting to be able to do that, to bring voices who want to be in this space because they know other people in the national security world are listening.
Oh, absolutely. Well, we were talking to NPR's All Things Considered co-host Mary Louise Kelly about her newest podcast, brand new weekly podcast, Sources and Methods with Mary Louise Kelly. Mary Louise, thank you so much for talking to me. I do really appreciate it.
Patricio, it was my pleasure. Thank you.
Big thanks to Patricio Rabayo for that story. Big thanks to Mary Louise Kelly for joining us here on the Local Edition. We're neighbors, you know. We follow All Things Considered. And you can hear a local news, talk, conversations twice a day, every weekday here on Radio Catskill. Don't miss Radio Catskill with Tim Bruno at 10 a.m. every weekday morning. And the Local Edition with myself and Patricio Rabayo right here every weekday evening at 6. Thank you for being here with me tonight for tonight's Local Edition. I will be back tomorrow. We'll talk to Philip Mantuso from the Times Union, get the latest local news from him. Tomorrow is the 11th of September, and we will have a report on September 11th as well. I know Patricio is working on a story and talking to the folks running the 9/11 Memorial Museum down in New York City. So we've got all that and more for you. Go to WJFFradio.org. It's WJFFradio.org to check out the latest events and news and information that we have for you about the station itself, and also to make a donation to keep us going because we need you now more than ever, because here on the radio, it's just you out there listening on that end of the speaker and us on this end of the microphone talking, and that's it. It's just you and us now. So whatever you can do to help us out is always appreciated. WJFFradio.org. And yeah, and our next big event is the Summer Jubilee happening up in Lou Beach, and that's happening on Saturday going from 5 to 8. Lou Beach, just past Beaver Kill, up past Livingston Manor. And I'll be there, so I hope to see you as well. We're going to have music from Calisun, Lolly and the Pops, and also a DJ set by our own Jason Tuga. Again, the details are up there at WJFFradio.org. We got more news on the way from The Daily. This is Radio Catskill.
Radio Catskill supporters include the Sterling Business and Technology Park, located at Exit 17 on Interstate 84 in Northeast Pennsylvania, offering opportunities to locate or expand businesses on property zoned for manufacturing and other uses. More information at sterlingbusinesspark.com. And listeners like you who donate at wjffradio.org.
I'm Jason Tuga, host of The Mixtape. I play classics you love, deep cuts, and brand new music. Friday nights at 7, only on Radio Catskill.
WJFF Jeffersonville. This is Radio Catskill. Local news, culture, and NPR.